Good morning, Houston. This is Rick Davis.
And Aaron Edwards.
Aaron Edwards.
That's right.
Sitting in for Lael Arrington.
Yeah.
Okay. Local pastor and good friend of mine, Aaron Edwards, and you're listening to The Things That Matter Most, the show where we talk about things that everyone's passionate about, but that matter a whole lot more than sports or politics. Yes, it's Sunday, and yes, we're talking about God, but this is certainly not Sunday school. Each week, we bring you a different spiritual perspective or hot topic. Our guest could be an atheist, he could be a Hindu, or we may talk about a controversy or a movie with spiritual meaning, but our purpose is always the same, to help you, our listener, to decide for yourself what you think is true and what is not about the most important questions of life. And Aaron, first of all, thank you for sitting in for Lael.
Well, I appreciate you having me.
Okay, and you actually were with us one time before.
I have.
What was the interview we did when you were here?
I'm an old pro. Actually, we talked to a Muslim about, we were asking if the Bible was actually the Word of God or the Quran.
Okay, good. Well, how about telling our listeners a little bit about the nature of our show today?
This is actually going to be a really interesting show, I believe. We're actually going to talk to a guy who is an atheist. And this guy actually auctioned off his atheistic point of view on eBay. And he, actually this non-profit Christian organization called Off the Map ended up bidding on this. And the criteria was that for every $10 of this final bid, he would attend 1 hour of Christian church services and then write about it on his blog, do surveys. So
and
it was
so
really interesting.
He did it. And so he, what is his website?
His actual website is friendlyatheist.com, and you can also read about his blogs on offthemap.com. But yeah, he did this, and they sent him to different churches, and he sat in and blogged and told about, I mean, and it seems to be a really objective point of view on Christian church, which he's, of course, probably never attended until now.
Now, my understanding is this thing's really picking up steam, and he's getting interviewed on some, you know, I mean, yes, our show, but not only our show.
Right, no, he's getting a lot of media attention right now, and he's, you know, on numerous different radio shows and TV interviews, and I think this is really because this is kind of a new venture. This is kind of a first among Christian and atheist circles.
Well, you know, being an atheist is being in a place, I think, that is very different than being a person who believes in God but just doesn't know who he is, right?
Right.
Before you can decide who he is, you got to have an opinion that he even exists, right?
Or
you wouldn't be asking that question.
Right.
And I think this is where Hemant is. He is not convinced or actually believes that there is not a God. And so I think that's going to be a very interesting thing. I think we'll get a chance to talk to him a little bit about his experiences in the churches, but in addition, see if we can ask him about why he has added things up the way he has,
right,
to conclude that there really is no God.
And I believe he is a seeker. I think that he is open-minded, and we should, you know, probe into that a little bit.
Before we move to actually introducing our guest, Aaron, can you tell our listeners a little bit about our feedback team?
Right. Well, actually, we're putting together a team and a feedback team. Some of you who listen to our show on a regular basis, we're actually inviting you. We would like a formal feedback, whether that's a rebuttal or whatever. If you would like to be a part of this, please go to info@thethingsthatmattermost.org. That's info@thethingsthatmattermost.org, and we would really appreciate your feedback. So
basically send us an email saying that you heard this invitation to be part of our feedback team. Send us an email to, as Aaron said, info@thethingsthatmattermost.org, and we will set you up and give you a chance to listen to our shows as the weeks progress and tell us how you think we can be better. And that being said, Aaron, how about introducing our guest?
Okay. Hemant Mehta. He is a graduate of the University of Illinois in Chicago, and while there, he actually helped establish their first group for non-religious people, which was called the Students Without Religious Dogma, or SWORD. He is the 2006 recipient of the American Atheist Life Member Scholarship, and he is currently working on a Master's in Education from DePaul University. And he, of course, we've already told you, blogs about his experiences as an atheist at www.friendlyatheist.com. He is also the head of an organization called the Secular Student Alliance. And he became an atheist in his teens, and this has been getting a whole lot of attention. And I think that we are going to have a great show with this.
Well, Hemant, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay.
Okay, Hammond, I wanted to start by asking you a couple of questions. I have a two-part question for you. First of all, do you consider yourself passionate about your atheistic point of view, and how would that compare probably to the passion that you've seen in Christians as you've been going to these churches?
Well, I think I am passionate about my atheism, but to say that I'm passionate about it, I guess that's more of an activist side of it, because, I mean, it's not religious fervor that I think the passionate Christian might have at a church.
Right.
That I'm doing all these things for God, and, you know, I'm very much in tune with whatever your spirituality is. It's not that sort of passion, but, you know, I do get really interested and worked up when I hear about, you know, civil injustices for atheists and discrimination against them. And, you know, a lot of times when you see church-state separation just having a problem, I mean, I get really passionate about that type of stuff. So in that sense, sure, I'm a passionate
right,
atheist.
Right, absolutely. And a lot of those things I think that possibly Christians could be passionate about as well. But obviously since you've gone...
Or should be. Right.
A lot of them aren't. But obviously since you've gone to such a diverse amount of churches, you've probably seen some inconsistencies. Can you name a few?
Inconsistencies with what?
Inconsistencies with maybe what your idea of the Bible teachings were, or inconsistencies within what they're saying, maybe some paradoxes or maybe some contradictions with one church to another, even though they claim the same God?
Well, I mean, obviously the churches were very different. I mean, there was a living room church, there was mega church, there was an all-black church. I mean, I've seen a lot of variety there. You know, I know that the overall message of Christianity is love, and I don't think anyone's denying me on that account.
Okay.
And, you know, I've been to some places where they just say things like, you know, these Muslim people, they need to be converted, so we're going to take a missionary trip there. And, you know, when you hear things like that, you just wonder, like, that's not what they were trying to do, I don't think.
Right.
It's one thing to talk about your faith and, you know, share it with others, but to just say that these people are bad, these people are wrong and evil because they think something different, it just seems contradictory to me of what the message of Christianity, at least in my idealized mind, should be.
Absolutely.
What is that?
I said absolutely. I agree with that completely.
Mm-hmm.
So, Rick?
Yeah, okay. Hammond, what adjectives would you use to describe the differences that you now perceive between Christians and non-Christians, and I'm very much wanting you to share any negatives as well as positives that you might have noticed or that you might think.
The differences between the two?
Yeah, like now you've really been exposed to a lot of Christians, and
mm-hmm.
obviously you know lots of non-Christians. Well, what adjectives would you use to characterize the difference between the groups?
Well, I know I'm probably biased when I say this, but knowing atheists that I've come to know the past several years, I think as a whole we're rational, open-minded people, and we're not about to try to stop anyone from practicing their religions. And when I go to some of the Christians, and again, there's been a huge variety here. I've met some Christians who I feel are very narrow-minded about, you know, this is the only way we must do this and everyone must succumb to these standards. And I met a lot of Christians that were completely liberal in that sense, where they said, you know, this is the path that we're choosing to take to God, but hey, other people have their paths, and, you know, we got to respect that. It doesn't mean we have to agree with them, but we have to respect that. You know, they've all been very open in terms of accepting people to come to their churches. They've been very kind and friendly to me, all of them. But the way they go about doing things are very different.
Okay, let me stay on that for a second, Aaron. So the one negative that I'm hearing is some greater level of closed-mindedness on the average among
sure.
Christians than atheists. What other negatives? I'm particularly interested in the negatives. What else? Is there anything else that you've noticed that really kind of bothers you?
You know, something that bothered me, and again, some churches did this really well, and other ones I saw didn't. The churches I saw do really well, they really use the Bible as, you know, a guide to how to live life. And it wasn't all about this is exactly what the Bible says and, you know, therefore this little, you know, grammar part must be true. You know, some of the churches didn't do that. One of the negative things that I saw is that there were a couple churches that really focused on overanalyzing a specific passage in Scripture. And it just, you know, you overanalyze it to the point where it really doesn't mean anything, or it's not relevant to me. You know, I don't really unless you're talking about why this is historically true, which is not what they were doing. They were saying, here's what happened in the past according to the Bible, and therefore blah, blah, blah.
Right. I read a story like you were talking about. You did a little piece on, and you talked a little bit about this, on why I'm addicted to Christian media. And I thought that was great, because what you're basically saying was that if we can incorporate our stories along with the story of the Bible, then that would seem a little bit more relevant than saying, because the Bible said so, period. Is that what you're saying?
Right. It's saying things that everyone can agree with in terms of how to live your life, but, you know, the Bible also supports this,
right.
And here's what it says in the Bible.
Absolutely.
I can live with that. I can understand that, and I'd be much more inclined to listen to that as opposed to the other way around. You know, the Bible says this. Well, you know, the Bible says a lot of things, and you could take it any way you want. But when there are commonalities in terms of not just Christians, but Christians, non-Christians, all different faiths,
humanity.
You know, when they say, you know, we have to make time for people that we love,
right.
Who's going to deny that? And if you support that with the Bible, hey, awesome.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, as a pastor, I know that there's a lot of churches that probably have kind of lost touch with this, and maybe, I mean, have you noticed that some churches have lost touch with the world outside their own subculture that they've created within?
Some of them seem like that. Most of them, thankfully, I don't think so.
So you found some to still be relevant?
What is that?
So you found some to still be relevant to what's going on today?
Absolutely. Some of them were great. I would definitely go back, not because it brings me closer to Christianity per se, but I really like hearing their message and the way they deliver it.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question, just answer this however you want to, and you don't even have to be categorized into this, what I'm going to ask you, but let me just ask you this. What would you say to be more accurate of your personal view of Christian spirituality? Would it be one that you want to believe, but you find it hard to reconcile this faith with, say, science and intelligence? Or would it be closer to, you think this faith may be true, but because of some personal reason you don't want to believe?
I don't think it's either of those. If I can characterize it, I'm open to believing. I'm not saying I want to or I don't want to. It's just, you know, it's for me as an atheist, it's the way it is. It just makes sense, atheism does. But am I open to believing Christianity or any faith for that matter? Sure, I am.
Right.
I just don't see the reasons to do it yet because, you know, things make sense for me right now when you take God out of the equation.
Right.
So to put something in there, you know, that doesn't need to be there, right now it doesn't make any sense.
Right. Well, more on a spiritual level, have you ever felt emotionally something that maybe Christians would refer to as the Holy Spirit, but whatever you want to call it, have you ever felt something drawing you to want to know some of this as a truth? Or, I mean, have you ever had this feeling, you know, and this is kind of a vague question because we're talking about emotions here, but you know what I'm talking about, though?
Well, yeah, it sounds like one of those things that if it happened to me, I would know it.
Right.
And I don't think that's happened to me yet.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Hammond, as you have visited churches, would you say that you have come in any way closer to considering the claims of Christianity, stayed the same, or fallen further away?
I don't think I've gotten closer to believing in God, and I made a point of writing that on the blogs. I do think that I've come to understand what the church is all about much better than I did before, because I think I went in there with stereotypes in my head of what I thought church would be like. So I'm much more open to the ideas of churches in general than I was before. I don't think I'm much closer to finding God. But I've definitely learned more about the religion than I did before, and I obviously sided really well with some of the more liberal churches. And the ones that were really teaching me lessons about life and using the Bible to kind of reinforce that.
Okay. Well, let me follow that up with this question. You have now been listening to you. Of course, I've been to your website and your blog and read a fair amount. So I came into this interview with a fair understanding of where you're coming from. But in listening to you now, it sounds like you're very much a rationalist, and it does sound to me like you're open-minded, but you're looking for something to persuade you. You're seeing
right.
belief not as so much an act of the will as a result of getting exposed to certain, perhaps, facts or whatever, things that would make you believe whatever was persuasive. Is that correct?
Sure. I mean, I want to be persuaded. I'm open to being persuaded.
Right.
But it hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
And the way the churches, you know, run their sermons, just, you know, talking about a certain passage, I don't think that's doing
right.
it.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, now, it seems to me like the whole question of Christianity being true, Jesus being who he said he was, which, of course, is part and parcel of Christianity, is a later question as far as the question of atheism. In other words, before you can even talk about who God is, you got to talk about whether there is a God at all. And it seems like that is kind of where you are. Do I have that correctly?
Yeah, that's pretty fair.
Okay. Well, I want to continue on that line of questioning, but we're out of time for the first segment. And so we're going to take a break. This is Rick Davis.
And Aaron Edwards.
And you're listening to The Things That Matter Most on AM 700 KCB The Voice, and we will be back in a minute.
We live so distracted from the things that matter most. Why is that? In an age glutted with images, we need a refreshed, renewed imagination for God. The premise of Lael Arrington's new book, God's Sight, is simple. If we don't enjoy God as much or more than our other relationships, it's because we don't see Him as He really is. God's Sight invites the reader to imagine God and His kingdom as the Bible describes them. God's Sight is available at Christian and online bookstores, as well as Lael's website, laelarrington.com.
What do New York City, Los Angeles, and Tomball have in common? Great nightlife. On Main Street, in old downtown Tomball, sits Main Street Crossing, the new hotspot for live music and a complete lineup of evening, entertainment, and gatherings. Monday night, we have Texas Hold'em Poker. On Wednesday night, the high school students take over. Thursday nights, we have young adults from age 18 to 25. And Friday nights, once again, we have Texas Hold'em Poker and live music. Things get really interesting at 4 o'clock and then again at 7 on Sundays when crowds gather for two events that are sort of like church but where you can enjoy food, beer, or wine. So you can call it what you like, but it's really a meaningful time. Main Street Crossing, a unique venue for Northwest Houston. 111 Main Street in Old Downtown Tomball, or go to www.mainstreetcrossing.com.
Okay, we're back. This is Rick Davis.
And Aaron Edwards.
And you're listening to The Things That Matter Most, where we bring you a different spiritual viewpoint each week to help you decide for yourself what you think is true and what is not about the most important questions of life. And we're in a very interesting interview.
Very interesting.
With a man named Hemant Mehta. And he's with us today because he is very openly an atheist and actually went online and sold on eBay some of his time where he offered for a certain pretty nominal amount of money he would actually go and visit Christian churches, and he's done that, and so he's had all kinds of opportunities to be interviewed, our interview being one of them, and so we're just going to continue along the same line of questioning. So, Aaron, you want to go ahead?
Yeah. Hemant, I was just going to ask you, you know, you've been to several different churches that, like you've already said, are really diverse. I mean, Willow Creek is a huge church in Chicago. And, I mean, what would your view, from what you've seen, what would a view of an ideal Christian church look like?
Ideal Christian church would be able to, you know, not just teach the Bible, but, like, explain how it's going to help us in life. Not just, you know, the Bible is true for the sake of it being true, but really how it's going to help us live our lives better.
Right.
I like Willow Creek as a model because they do offer people who come to their church a little bit of everything. You know, they have the places for the family to go. They have the bookstore, the cafe, everything. I love to see churches that help in the community, just volunteering all their time in service. That's great to see. And they're helping out other people. I would love to see them do more things with other faiths, because the point is not just for everyone to be Christian, but to live a good life and to help other people and help other faiths as well. That would be great to see.
Yeah, just like, I mean, Jesus said himself that they will know that we're one of his by the love that we show to everyone. And I agree with that 100%. I think that if we could cross these cultural boundaries that we set, these lines that we set, whether that's between atheists and Christians or between Christians and other religions, and if we could come together and form relationships and dialogues, I really do think that that would make all the difference in the world. But let me ask you one other question. Are the sermons that you hear in these churches, do you think they're consistent with what we do know of the teachings of Jesus?
You know what? I'm not the expert in, like, the philosophical nature of all this stuff.
Right.
But everything so far I've heard has, at least at the churches that, you know, use the Bible, the ones that don't overanalyze it, the ones that just kind of talk about it, I guess on a surface level, it makes sense, I guess, what they're saying.
Right.
In terms of, you know, here's what he said, therefore, like, you know, this is something that Jesus said, it's the way we should live our life. Well, I'm not arguing with the lesson of what he said. I don't know whether he said it. I'm not the expert in that, you know?
Right.
But to go back to your last question really quickly, I think one of the problems is that people just see, you know, you believe something different than me, so we're not going to work together, we're not going to talk about it, when in fact, I think those different faiths have pretty much a lot of the same goals. So
oh, definitely, a lot of the same morals.
Yeah, it's a lot of the same morals, too, and that goes for atheists as well, and I don't think people know that.
Hammett, have you ever heard the term existential despair?
I've heard those two words separately. Could you explain that term to me?
Okay. Well, how I understand that term is, and I don't know all of your educational background, but but obviously there is a whole group, or category is probably a better word, category of a philosophy that's come to be known as existentialism, and guys like Jean-Paul Sartre and others are famous existentialists. It's oftentimes called the philosophy of despair because it is a philosophy that basically believes, it's an atheist philosophy that believes that there is no God, and where they take that is that they say, well, since there's no God, then in an ultimate sense, there's no right and wrong. And in an ultimate sense, there's no meaning. And where the despair comes in is that there, for a lot of people, there's this horrible feeling that they get trying to live their life in a situation where they, in an ultimate sense, really can't know what's right and wrong, or can't know that there is any meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So my question for you is, have you ever experienced anything like that? Do you have any kind of a spiritual loneliness or existential despair in experiencing your atheism?
No, I don't. And I don't think a lot of I think that's something that a lot of people think atheists feel. You know, if you don't have God in your life can't have meaning, you must be really sad and lonely, you must be looking for something to fill that void. And I've never, ever found that to be true. Every time I've been around atheists, we all have, you know, goals in our life. We all want to help the people around us, and there's no loneliness. There's no loneliness personally. I know what I'd like to do, you know, and yeah, ultimately everyone's going to be gone, so that's not a big deal. It's not something I concern myself with. But there's no despair at all. There's no loneliness because that's not in my life, and I'm not about to grab on something like God just to fill a void that's not really there.
Right. Okay. So let me tell you a little bit about my story. I'd love to hear you reflect on it. When I was, up until the time I was 18 years old, I had none of those feelings. And then actually, in one particular moment, one particular summer evening, after my senior year of high school and before I went to college, I had one particular conversation with a friend of mine that plunged me into all of this deep thinking about meaning and purpose and is there really a God, and actually went into about 12 years of pretty serious depression and anxiety. And lest that sounds strictly like mental illness, one of Jean-Paul Sartre's books was called Nausea. That's what that was the title, because of the feelings that he had, because of this sense that, I mean, he had decided for sure there was no God, there was no meaning, there was no ultimate right and wrong. So I went through this horrible period of my life and then came to faith at age 30 and have, you know, really now since that time, I'm 53 today, so 23 years, I've been like you. I haven't had that emptiness for 23 years. I'm sure it was miraculous because I was a basket case for 12 years. But that doesn't resonate with you at all. The kind of experience I had is nothing like anything you've ever experienced.
Well, it resonates in the sense that, you know, I'm glad you found something that worked for you, but I haven't experienced the same thing. And, you know, I guess at some point if that feeling did come in me, that I did feel the despair, I would want something to help me out, but I don't know if that, I don't think that means we automatically have to reach out to God. You
Correct.
Know, it could be something else.
Well, Sartre himself decided that what he believed was true, that there was nothing, and so he lived his life that way. And, you know, there's a lot of suicides. I'm not being critical of existentialism. I'm just saying it's just a statistical fact that a lot of people that are there end up feeling like life has no meaning and actually do end up ending it. But to tell you just a little bit more about my experience so that you can comment on it, well, here's what happened to me. I wanted to ignore that feeling. It was very painful to live with. And so I would, like, try to have a purpose about something. Like, you know, I want to live with some passion, right, and some joy. And in order to get up and have anything matter, I needed to have a purpose. In order to have purpose, I had to have meaning. And so I would, like, move in a direction, try to convince myself that there was some greater meaning for that it really mattered what I was going to do today. And then and I could kind of do it for a little while, and then all of a sudden my brain would, like, peak at this other view, and it was like my intellect would poke through, and I would just be like deflated like a balloon, like, oh darn it, that's right, there's really no purpose here. And I had this horrible feeling. But you don't find that poking into your happiness and destroying your happiness, it sounds like.
Why would it be? I don't see why it would be destroyed.
Right.
You know, I live for my friends, my family, to, you know, have a life with them, and that's fine. And so, what's the problem?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's probably the difference. You know, for me, it was like a plague. I mean, I couldn't get away from it. It was horrible. And so that is a pretty fundamental difference between your mindset and mine. So, very, very interesting. Okay. Well, we're coming to the end of our second segment here. This has been a great interview so far. We have a third segment, but we're going to break away here. And this is Rick Davis.
This is Aaron Edwards.
And you're listening to The Things That Matter Most on AM 700 KCB The Voice. And we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a second.
How many Texans go hungry? In one of the wealthiest, most agriculturally rich states in the nation, over 3.1 million people in Texas don't always know where they will get groceries or money for their next meal.
I'm Alonzo Highsmith, spokesperson for the New Kid Care. The faces of hunger vary. Many of these people are children or the elderly. They may be Caucasian, African American, Hispanic, or Asian. Now that you know who these people are, here's how you can help.
Here in Houston, the New Kid Care provides lunches to more than 900 children every day. Our emergency food pantry is available for people to visit. As the New Kid Care grows, so does our clothing bank.
Please consider helping us build this program with your financial support. You can do that by going online at thenewkidcare.com or by calling 713-695-5437.
The New Kid Care. It's working here in Houston.
Okay, we're back. This is Rick Davis.
This is Aaron Edwards.
Hello, Aaron.
Hi, how are you?
Okay. And you're listening to The Things That Matter Most, the show where we talk about the most important questions of life. And we're continuing, moving into our third segment of a very interesting interview with Hemant Mehta, who is a man who offered some of his time on eBay, offered that he would, in exchange for a really nominal amount of money, go visit churches. I didn't mention Hemant is an atheist and was willing to go visit churches. And since then, he's been writing on his blog and been getting a lot of interviews and different radio shows, etc. And so we have an opportunity to interview him today.
By the way, what did you do with that money?
I actually donated it to a group I work with, the Secular Student Alliance, at secularstudents.org. It's kind of like the way I like to think about it. You know Campus Crusade for Christ?
Right.
It's like that, but it's like an umbrella organization, but it's for atheist and agnostic and secular groups on colleges and high schools across the country.
That's interesting.
Hemant, there was another thing that you wrote on your blog that I thought was very interesting that I wanted to ask you about, and it's a little bit of a convoluted question. It'll take me a minute to get out, but stick with me here, okay? Okay, you say in what you've written that you experience no fear, zero about the afterlife. Like when you hear a preacher warning about hell, you are amused. And I'm not saying that mockingly. I'm just trying to give an accurate portrayal of what you've written. Now, I want to ask you this fairly complex question, and I'd like to really appeal to you to give an accurate, thoughtful answer, even if it is, well, Rick, you make a good point. Maybe I should experience a little fear, but let me go ahead and try to say it accurately. Some of the most brilliant people in our world believe the message of the Bible. Now, would you agree? I'm not saying most, but there's definitely...
I think there have definitely been some smart people who believe in the Bible.
Okay,
sure.
Good, okay. And now, they might be as smart or smarter than you or me, and they have somehow added this all up believing that it's true. Now, when you think even hypothetically about the consequences of an eternity in hell, whatever a person may envision that to be, certainly the suggestion is it's hellish in some way. When you think about an eternity in hell and a billion years goes by and that's just the beginning and it will never end, and then you think that, you know, X number of very smart people have believed this message, I have trouble relating to you in the regard that you have no, that doesn't give me any anxiety. That there's nothing inside of you that says it has the slightest fear that you could be wrong and the consequences would be catastrophic, to say the least. What are your comments on that?
Well, first of all, I do agree that X number of people, you know, have been, you know, brilliant people have believed in the Bible, but I also know that, you know, a number of scientists, the National Academy of Sciences, they don't believe in that.
That's true.
And so for the same reason, they don't have any evidence that there is a hell or there is a God. It's something that's more man-made than anything. And so, you know, I prefer to listen to them because that makes more sense to me than something that I can't see or I can't touch or anything like that. I think that when we die, it's over. Right. So we got to make the best of the life we have now. We got to do good things now and, you know, donate your body when you die.
Sure.
But there's no reason for me to be afraid of it because while you're listening to those smart people who have said there is a God, there is the hell... I could just as easily listen to the huge number of people, the scientists, that have said none of that is real.
Okay. Well, maybe then you'd comment on this. There is this term, perhaps it's more used more frequently within the church than outside, but it's called Pascal's Wager. Now, have you heard of that,
Pascal's Wager? I have, basically saying that if there... is no God, then it doesn't matter. If there is a God, then I'm screwed for not believing in
him. Well, let's not personalize it. I'm not necessarily you, but anybody. Yeah, and so let me go on about this just for the sake of our listeners. So here's what that means. Pascal was right, perhaps even where you were, and said, well, yes, there are different people that believe different things, but I'm going to cast my vote where there's going to be no consequences for me if I'm wrong. Now, that seems rational to me.
It seems rational to a point. I think what happens is that when you start believing, though, without having the reason, you're wasting a lot of time when you could be doing other things.
Right.
I think that a lot of people take it so seriously that, you know, I don't need medicine. I'll just pray to God.
Well, right.
You're going to hurt yourself in the long run. I think there are some consequences to believing in God, when you don't have a reason to, you know. There are a lot of Christians who do believe in God, and they do good things because of that, and I'm not telling them to stop. But for someone like me who doesn't believe, for me to just start praying and start doing things like that just in case, I think that would be a serious waste of my time when I don't have that belief yet.
Okay, so that's a great response. Do you see any evidence that there's a God? I mean, I could understand... and not that it matters how I evaluate it, but I'm just trying to communicate to our listeners. I certainly hear you saying that the evidence to you is in favor of atheism, but that might not mean that you see no evidence that there could be a God. Do you see any evidence that there could be a God?
There's a lot of things that I know science can't answer yet, and I think that's what a lot of people use to try to convince me that there must be a God. But, you know, I do think that science will be able to explain some of that stuff. You know, like the origin of, you know, if you believe in evolution, where did that initial, you know, initial being come from? Well, there's some explanations, but there is no definite idea in science. A lot of good theories, but nothing definite. But I think eventually we could figure something like that out. Now, that by itself, you know, it doesn't mean I have to automatically go to God because we don't know it.
Right.
A lot of people have asked, what would it take to convince me that there is a God? And it's a hard question to answer. I guess I would need to see something that there's absolutely no natural explanation for it.
Right.
And they've cited a few different things, but nothing that, you know, nothing that science can't explain or can't prove.
I almost think that, you know, it was easier to explain God away before the age of scientific enlightenment. In other words, the farther we get into this, the more complex it gets, and then you're thinking, could this really be chance? You know, I mean, that this all fell into place. I just really feel like,
sure.
You know, as you break it down, the smaller you get whenever you're getting on a molecular level, it gets to where it's like, wow, this is a whole nother city of things going on in here, you know?
Well, Hammett, let me ask you about one specifically. We're down just to a couple of minutes here, but you had made the statement that it would be somewhat compelling to you if you could find out something that we could not imagine a natural explanation for. So let me try one out on you. And I'm sure you've heard this. This is no great insight. But basically, here's the deal. In our understanding of physics, meaning the laws of the physical universe, we all believe that something, it's called the law of cause and effect, something cannot come from nothing. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the 1960s, as I'm sure you all know, but some of our listeners may not, in the 1960s, science figured out that there was this thing called a Big Bang. Now, before then, a lot of scientists, atheists in particular, when asked to explain where the universe came from, took the position that the universe was eternal. And nobody could really argue with that because we didn't have the theory of the Big Bang yet. But in the 1960s, everybody, and I think this was mostly in response to the work of Einstein, everybody came to agree that time and space and matter all had a beginning. So let's think about what that means. It doesn't mean that there was a big black void, because a big black void would still have time and there still would be space. Scientists today say there was a time before there was time, and there was a time before there was space, and before there was matter. Okay? So science has no explanation for that. Now, logically, to me, all of our laws of science say, well, you have to go outside of time and space to explain the beginning of time and space. So that is a pretty definite, and I'm not saying this makes you a believer, I'm just asking for you to respond so our listeners can hear your response. To me, that may not lead me to believe in God, but it makes me sure there is something outside of time and space.
Well, first of all, let me just clarify that, you know, I'm not the expert here, and I'm sure there's a bunch of physicists listening who could easily correct anything I'm going to say.
Sure.
You know, again, science doesn't know it, but they do have theories about it, but they're not really testable, so it's hard to say what's going to happen. I think the mistake that some people make is just because we don't know the answer, or, you know, even if we can't figure out the answer using scientific methods, that it must be God who did it, or it must be something out there.
Right.
And I'm just not jumping to that conclusion because I have no reason to think it is, you know, the Christian God or what have you. You know, and, you know, if you want to go with the cause and effect route, then, you know, if God caused this, then who caused God?
Oh,
you know,
can I try that one, Hammett? Can I try that one?
Go for it.
Oh, you get to interview me for a second. Okay, here's my little theory. My theory is when you get out of time and space, the rules are different. That things don't need a beginning. And I'm not trying to persuade you, by the way. I'm just telling you how I add it up. I have no problem with that. In fact, I read an article. I subscribe to Skeptic Magazine. You'd be proud of me, which is an atheist.
Shermer's Magazine.
Yeah, Shermer's Magazine. I was reading it last night. I don't like everything I read in there because it upsets me, because some of it actually is fairly persuasive, and I try to stay open. But I was reading it last night, and one of the arguments in one of the articles was that, even saying there's a God doesn't answer the problem of beginnings, because where did God begin? And I really think I'm right on this, even though I'm not a scientist. And I think the answer there is, well, when you move outside of time and space, you also move out of the realm of cause and effect. Now, we don't know what's out there, but there is no reason to think that the same rules apply out there. So what do you think about that?
But again, can we, it's a great theory, but can we prove that? And scientifically, we can't really prove something that's outside of, you know, things
we
can observe.
That's true.
So that's the problem. And we get along because I read Charisma Magazine for Christians, so.
Oh, man. We gotta be buddies.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I really do try to discipline myself to expose myself to these other views. And I have to admit, I mean, there is evidence on both sides. So,
yeah, it's great to hear that you are reading that.
Oh, yeah. And I don't like it. I mean, because I want to believe what I believe.
Mess
my world up big time. I don't want to be wrong. But I do. I have this show, right? And it's about diverse spiritual views. And so I feel a responsibility to make sure I'm exposed to views that don't agree with mine and that are critical of mine. Okay, well, Hemant, this has been just one of our best interviews. And
it really
thank
has.
You so much
it's been a blast.
For being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. And if anyone wants to find out more about what's going on with the auction and the church going, again, that website is friendlyatheist.com. So all the stuff comes from there.
And you can also read a lot of those blogs on Off the Map, am I right?
Right, and there's a link to Off the Map from there, but directly to go to the actual church critiques, it's OTM, that stands for Off the Map, OTMAtheist.com.
Well, Hemant, from a couple of friendly Christians to a friendly atheist, we say thank you very much, and we'll keep an eye on the news and watch your whole deal progress. It's pretty interesting.
That's great.
Okay,
well, thank
Hemant.
You so much for having me.
Thanks
I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, well, this has been a great interview, don't you think?
Oh, really good. I really enjoyed it.
Well, this is Aaron Edwards.
And Rick Davis.
And this is The Things That Matter Most. We'll be back in just a second.
HomeAge Houston, a Greater Houston Builders Association nonprofit organization, partners with local housing industry leaders who donate time and money to construct dignified housing for homeless families and individuals. HomeAge Houston is a chapter of HomeAge America, the nation's largest provider of transitional housing for the temporarily homeless. Please join us as we take this step toward rebuilding lives and eliminating homelessness in Houston. Visit us online at homeaidhouston.org.
We're back, and this is Rick Davis.
This is Aaron Edwards.
Aaron Edwards sitting in for Lael Arrington, and you are listening to The Things That Matter Most, the show where we talk about things everyone's passionate about but that matter a whole lot more than sports or politics. And if you've been listening, you know that we have just completed, I think, one of our best interviews with a young man, a graduate student at DePaul University named Hemant Mehta. And he is a guy, he became an atheist when he was 17, and recently auctioned off his atheism, so to speak, on eBay, and made the offer that he would be willing to go to church, visit churches in exchange for a certain amount of money. And what was the organization, Aaron, that bid on the deal?
Actually, it was offthemap.com.
Off the Map made a bid and bought Hemant's time for $10 an hour, if I understand correctly.
Right. The actual final bid was $504.
Okay. So 54 hours, I guess.
Actually 50, but yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So Hemant has, as an atheist, has visited lots of different churches, and it was a very interesting interview.
I thought it was great.
Well, Aaron, what are your thoughts about Hemant's experiment within the church?
Well, I think that it's really a great idea. You know, as a pastor, I view it as kind of a wake-up call to the church. And I really think that if church leaders read his blogs, then they will be able to see kind of how the, quote, outside world views the church. And I think that Hemant is very objective, and I think that he is not judgmental with his opinions. I found his assessments very interesting.
Yeah, he has, when you talk to him, you really get the sense that he is, in fact, a friendly atheist, right?
Right, he's the friendly atheist, yeah. I don't know if he's the friendly atheist, but
he is a friendly atheist. Yeah. And he did seem objective and open, and he actually said that if he had a reason to believe, he has no problem with believing, it's just that he hasn't found a reason to believe yet.
Yeah, he is definitely what I would refer to as a seeker. And, you know, and I've heard you say, Rick, I've heard you say a lot that you've believed that science proves God, but not who he is. But you believe the Bible proves who God is. So, I mean, I like that. And I think it's worth talking about. So, you know, for those of you of them that don't understand exactly what you're talking about, why don't you explain?
Sure. Well, I just draw the distinction very much so between the area of disbelief one part of disbelief is the question of who God is. But there's a question that precedes that, and that is there a God at all? And I think that's where Hemet is. But I think a lot of times when we try to understand people who don't believe, we need to be able to draw the distinction between these two types of unbelief. And the reason that I say that science proves God, but not who he is that that's just really what I found in my searching for evidence, both before I became a believer and after. What I found was that although science doesn't tell me who God is, that a tremendous amount of evidence that he exists is actually found within science. And one example of that, Aaron, you remember the part of our interview where we talked to Hemet about this law of cause and effect,
right?
And we said that in our laws of physics, and here we're talking about science, in our laws of physics, that everyone agrees, scientists, atheists and non-atheists, atheists and believers alike agree that within our natural world, every effect has to have a cause.
Right.
And everyone understands, knows, and believes that something, and in this case I'm talking about the universe, can't come from nothing. And in the interview we referred to the fact that in the 1960s, with the development of the theory of the Big Bang, all scientists of all stripes, atheists and believers alike, came to understand that the universe actually had a beginning. And so one of the ways that science proves that if it doesn't prove God, it certainly proves that there must be something outside of time and space, is that the universe must have come from some cause.
So let me ask you a question just to clarify. What you're saying is that science proves that there has to be something. We might call it God, but it, of course, it's not proving the character of God. Is that what you're saying?
It's not who he is. Yeah. Okay. That's probably a good clarification. Science definitely proves that there's something outside of time and space.
Right.
To me, the most plausible explanation would be God. But I guess it could theoretically be something other than God.
Not sure what you would call that, but yeah.
Right, exactly. But it certainly doesn't say who God is.
Right.
Okay. Well, Aaron, what do you believe that we can learn about the church from an atheist?
I think we can learn a lot. I think that we can kind of get wrapped up in our own subculture. I mean, I'm looking around me and, you know, sometimes that's what happens in churches, and we unknowingly, we start to kind of develop our own language and our own secret handshake, if you will, and then we become kind of irrelevant to the other people who are seekers. And I think that when an unbeliever, especially an atheist, comes in to and assesses the situation, I think we should stop and listen. I really do. I mean, after all, it's these people who we should be trying to develop relationships with. And this is a good way to kick off a healthy dialogue, which we had today. And by the way, that is exactly what these surveys have done. They have created dialogue between Christians and atheists. And if you go to Off the Map, or if you go to friendlyatheist.com, you can see some of these conversations taking place between Christians and atheists that probably would not have contacted each other or formed any relationships before. So yes, I think we can learn a lot from atheists. And once we start to break down some of these cultural barriers, then I think that atheists might be able to learn something from us as well.
Hmm. Very interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, I really loved the fact that this whole thing happened. And it's kind of groundbreaking in a way, because it hasn't happened before.
That's right.
But, okay, so you always talk about how there is so much evidence indicating that there is a God. That's kind of your deal, isn't it?
Yeah, that's my deal.
The evidence thing.
You bet.
Yeah, I hear about it all the time.
I know you do.
And there is a God and who he is. And why do you focus on this so much? I mean, you talk about it every week.
Well, it probably has a lot to do with my particular spiritual experiences, spiritual journey, and that is that I had a lot of, I guess what I'll call, intellectual obstacles to coming to faith, because there were just lots of things of an intellectual nature,
right,
or an evidence-related nature that didn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
And so I have a particular sensitivity for people who, like perhaps Hemant, it actually sounded like Hemant might be this way. A person who might be open to believing, but he just doesn't see the evidence. And I think that the thing that people don't know is that God left us with tons of evidence, just tons of evidence. Some of it scientific, some of it fulfilled prophecy, but and lots of other kinds as well. And I just think this is a very ignored area, and a lot of people are prevented from coming to faith because they don't know that this evidence exists. So that's why I focus on it so much.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Aaron, do you agree with Hemant's point of view?
Well, I think he makes a lot of good points. I think he makes some great points about the current state of the church. I think even more so from a Christian perspective, or me being a pastor, I see some points that he's making that kind of hit home, maybe in a way that he doesn't even know. For instance, he said that he learns more when a pastor starts to tell his stories that are parallel to the stories of the Bible. Because it's then that people can see that the scriptures have stories that are relevant to our lives. Obviously, I don't agree with everything Hemant says, or else I probably wouldn't believe what I believe. But like I said, I really did enjoy the dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Well, Aaron, we said in the beginning of this show that you're a pastor, mm-hmm. and you are actually the pastor of kind of an unusual church. So could you tell our listeners a little bit about your church and what your goals are for your church?
Sure. I mean, it's called Sundays at Main Street, S-O-N-D-A-Y-S, and it meets over there at Main Street Crossing, which we're affiliated with, and it's actually over there at 111 Main Street in Tomball, Texas, for anybody who wants to check us out. We actually meet in the evenings on Sunday. We get together, we grill hamburgers and hot dogs, and we kind of eat together, break bread together, and that's kind of our way of uniting. We kind of start that around 6:30, and then around 7 o'clock we just go into what I guess you could call our service. But it's a little different than the traditional church in the sense that I really think that the people, that they're not coming under a steeple. This is more of a coffee house, music venue type thing, and it's just I think that the people that don't share our beliefs, they're probably not as intimidated as they would if they were walking into a formal church. And when they walk into our place, I hope at least that we make them feel welcome. But as far as my goal, I really believe that the story of the Bible and the story of God is just as relevant today as it was when it was written. But we have to start sharing our stories in order to incorporate them with the story of God. It's kind of what it's all about. I just want us to learn that Jesus taught us as much with his life as he did with his death and his resurrection. And so I really want us to kind of collectively enter into this journey with no false pretenses of who we are, because I believe that whatever good that comes from us is just really us allowing God to work through us. And I want us to learn the true meaning of community, and yet I know that we will probably never have it all figured out. So really, I just think that the best we can do is just try to be the hands and feet of Christ, and remember that the last thing unbelievers need is someone else to judge them. I believe we can better represent Jesus by our love.
Okay. Well, Aaron, thanks for joining me for the show today.
Well, thanks for having me. I want to do it again.
Okay. Well, and to you, our listeners, as you get ready to go into another busy week, please remember this. There's nothing more important than finding out what's true and what's not about the most important questions of life. Is there a God? And if so, who is he? Is he Allah or Jesus or Buddha or all of the above? And has he communicated with us? And if he has, what has he said? The time will come for each of us when the answer to these questions may determine our eternity. So as you come into this new week, remember not to get so busy that you don't take time to think about the things that matter most.